Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
From Washington, this is VOA News. Hong Kong marks a national day as crowds of protesters continue to grow, and Ebola in Texas as well as West Africa. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Chanting, go Hong Kong, go, throngs of pro-democracy protesters are in Hong Kong today, heckling the territory's chief executive during China's National Day ceremonies, marking the 65th anniversary of the founding of Communist China. At a flag-raising ceremony, some protesters yelled for chief executive Li Yung Chengying to step down. Student leaders warned that if Li Yung does not resign by the end of day tomorrow, they will step up their actions, occupying government buildings. In spite of tens of thousands of demonstrators, there have been no reports of violence since Sunday, day when police used tear gas and pepper spray trying to disperse crowds. An Ebola patient diagnosed in the U.S. state of Texas was turned away from the hospital at his first visit in spite of telling them he was from Liberia. That word from his sister, Karen Langren, is the U.N. Secretary General's Special Representative for Liberia, one of the hardest hit countries in West Africa.
The world is absolutely not doing enough yet. We're still challenged to outrun the disease. And as long as the new cases continue to increase the way they are, as long as we look around and don't see spare bed spaces in Ebola treatment units, we know we aren't winning yet.
The U.S. patient began showing symptoms days after arriving in the U.S. on September 20th, and he's now in strict isolation. The governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is scheduled to make a televised statement to concerned Texans on the situation later today. The patient was believed again to have been infected in Liberia. This is VOA News. A rights group says more than 100 demobilized fighters in the Democratic Republic of Congo are dead of starvation and disease in a remote military camp. Human Rights Watch says the DRC's neglect of the people at the camp in northwestern DRC is criminal. In a statement, the group called on the government to move everyone at the camp to a more accessible site, hold account to those responsible for the mistreatment, and encourage greater UN involvement in the rehabilitation of former fighters. The camp in the Ikeda province houses hundreds of surrendered fighters from various groups, as well as their families. U.S.-led airstrikes hit near a key Syrian border town for a second day as Kurdish fighters defend the area from Islamic State militants. The U.S. military confirmed three strikes today near Kobane, destroying an IS tank, artillery, and an armed vehicle. Fighting there during the past several weeks has sent more than 160,000 people fleeing for safety. President Barack Obama is hosting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for talks today, expected to focus on nuclear talks with Iran. The meeting at the White House comes days after Mr. Netanyahu told the UN General Assembly that Iran is trying to trick the world into lifting sanctions while still allowing it to develop nuclear weapons. He warned that a nuclear-armed Iran would be more dangerous than the Islamic State group operating in Iraq and Syria. Iran has long insisted its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes. The talks to reach a comprehensive agreement were supposed to end in July, but the two sides agreed to extend the process to November 24th. Former Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic is beginning his closing statement at his trial in The Hague, maintaining innocence of wrongdoing in the 1990 Bosnia War and admitting only moral responsibility. Karadzic is charged with 11 crimes, including genocide for Srebrenica, where almost 8,000 Muslim men and boys were slaughtered in 1995 by Serb forces under General Ratko Mladic's command. Karadzic insisted UN prosecutors do not have any evidence to support charges linking him to the atrocities in the Bosnian War, and he accused them of putting the entire Serb people on trial. 10 people died today when shells hit near a school and a minibus in East Ukraine's rebel-held city of Donetsk. 4 people were killed when one shell exploded just a few meters from the building on what was supposed to be the first day of classes for students in the area. No children died, but a parent and a teacher of a student were among the casualties. In a separate incident, a shell hit a public minibus, killing 6. And a summit of Nobel Peace Prize winners to be held in Cape Town may be canceled because of a protest boycotting South Africa's refusal to give a visa to Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama. 6 female laureates canceled their visit to South Africa after the government denied the Dalai Lama entry to the country last month. The 6 accused China of pressuring countries to curb interactions with the Dalai Lama, who also is a Peace Prize winner. I'm Marty Johnson.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
United Nations reform has formally been on the agenda for close to two decades, and yet we are no nearer to change because of the stubborn and cynical opposition of the dominant powers.
That's Eritrean Minister of Foreign Affairs Osman Mohamed Saleh speaking on the need for UN reform. Details coming up. Also in the news, judges at the International Criminal Court want Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta to appear at The Hague. And U.S. health officials confirm the first Ebola case in the United States. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, judges at the International Criminal Court decided yesterday that Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta must appear for a hearing on October 8th at The Hague. The meeting will determine the starting date of Mr. Kenyatta's trial on charges of participating in crimes against humanity. He's accused of organizing demonstrations that resulted in the deaths of an estimated 1,200 people in Naivasha and Nakuru communities following the national election of 2007. Proceedings on the charges have frequently been delayed. The demonstrations took place prior to his 2013 election while he served as a leader of an opposition party. Lawyers for Mr. Kenyatta say the charges should be dropped for lack of evidence. Marine researchers hope that fish farming, the process of raising fish in ponds for food, can help African countries overcome chronic food shortages. From Athens, Mohamed Yusuf has more.
Scientists from the Athens-based Hellenic Center for Marine Research are working on ways to improve fish farming in Europe and now have been asked to do the same to alleviate food shortages in Africa. The governments of Kenya and Sierra Leone approached the European Union for assistance with fisheries. Hellenic Center Director Evangelos Papathinassou explains this is a joint European-African project.
Now, regarding the African countries, I know that there is an initiative from the EU side, and actually there were a couple of meetings or three meetings with high-level officials from the African countries and the EU in terms of research and innovation for food security.
The project began this year to encourage fish farming as a way to combat overfishing, with decreasing fish stocks in rivers and lakes due to environmental pollution. The practice is one way for Africa to feed its population and bridge the gap between demand and supply in the market. The Hellenic Center has sent some researchers to Kenya's Lake Victoria, where fish stocks have been dropping, to set up a pilot project. Papathinassou says Africa needs to find new ways to feed its population in case traditional sources of food are exhausted.
You could have the food that you need if the food supply is not enough, or if you exhaust the fisheries, let's say, from one lake, then you shouldn't exhaust the fisheries from one lake. You should fish as long as you can have as a stable yield, and then try to have a culture fish. So it's a kind of a combination that probably will come through the projects eventually.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says 214 million people in sub-Saharan Africa currently face some type of food crisis, and that the continent is making slower progress in achieving international hunger reduction targets than other regions. The FAO says one in four Africans are undernourished, the highest rate among any region in the world. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Athens.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is urging the world to do more to prevent conflict and forced displacement around the world. Speaking at a special session of the UNHCR annual refugee conference in Geneva, the Secretary General warns the United Nations has limited resources to handle the growing number of global crises. VOA's Lisa Schlein has the story.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he spends his time rushing from one hotspot to another. He says his agenda is full of crises and more keep being added. He says the world is in a sorry state. The planet is warming, diseases are spreading. Along with these and other natural calamities, he says most of the crises with which the world has to contend are man-made. And these disasters, he says, are causing unimaginable suffering for millions of people.
In Iraq and Syria, we see due depth of barbarity with each passing day and devastating spillover effects across the region. The continent of Africa is a home to billions of refugees and internally displaced, including more than 2 million people forced to leave their homes this year alone. This includes people fleeing from war and civil strife from the Central African Republic to northern Nigeria, from the Horn of Africa to the Sahel.
UN aid agencies are assisting more than 50 million refugees and displaced people. Ban says the United Nations has never been asked to reach so many people with emergency food assistance and other life-saving support. He says conflict prevention is one of his top priorities because it is more humane and far less costly than dealing with a full-blown emergency. He says it is more difficult to ask the General Assembly for $5 million to head off an emergency, then to request $5 billion to assist millions of victims of war that have shattered their lives.
I hope that we should be wise when we see some symptoms of problems, that we have to address these symptoms before it becomes faster. But at the same time, I'm asking world leaders, they should really listen to the voices and aspirations of their people. That means good governance, inclusive governance, and rule of law.
The UN chief says human rights should be put at the center of everything dealing with refugees and asylum seekers. He says human rights involve physically protecting people from those who would kill them. He says human rights involve trying to ease some of the misery and hardship of people who, through no fault of their own, have been forced to uproot their way of life. He says he is personally committed to help these desperate people because he was once one of them. During the Korean War, he says, as a child, he and his family had to run for their lives. He says the United Nations was there to help and to act as a beacon of hope to him and his family. He says now he's in a position to return this generosity by encouraging refugees not to give in to despair, but to realize there is hope of turning their lives around. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. health officials confirmed last night that a man now in an isolation unit of a Dallas hospital has tested positive for Ebola. The patient, who had been described as a man traveling from Liberia, is critically ill at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. His name, nationality, and age have not been made public. Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, verified that the man left Liberia for the U.S. on September 19th to visit relatives. He fell ill 4 or 5 days later. Frieden said health officials are tracing all possible contacts the traveler has made since he arrived in the U.S. Frieden said Ebola does not spread until someone gets sick, and this patient did not get sick until 5 days after his plane arrived. You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
HelpAge International published the index of 96 countries that are home to 7...
14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Judges at the International Criminal Court want Kenya President Uhuru Kenyatta to appear for a hearing on October 8th at The Hague. And U.S. health officials confirm the first Ebola case in the United States. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. Norway tops the list of countries that offers the best social policies for people over 60. Afghanistan is rated the worst. The rankings appear in the new Global Age Watch Index. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
HelpAge International published the index of 96 countries that are home to 790 million people 60 and older. Chief Executive Officer Toby Porter says, for too long, older people have been excluded from international and national development planning. He blames much of that on what he calls exceptionally poor data on older people.
We have a world which is aging fast. And what the index does is compares and ranks countries from best to worst countries in the world to grow old.
He says the Global Age Watch Index rates countries in four categories.
Health, income, what we call capability, ability to carry on contributing, employment, and then the final one about enabling environment. What do older people think about the environment that they live in?
Porter says many older people are not financially secure.
The focus on the report this year is on pensions, on retirement income that older men and women can expect.
The index says only one in four people over 65 in low and middle income countries have any kind of retirement saving. HelpAge lists the best pension system as a universal basic payment that is available to everyone once they are old enough. Norway gets the highest ranking in the index. Rounding out the top 10 are Sweden, Switzerland, Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, Iceland, the United States, Japan, and New Zealand. Afghanistan is at the bottom of the list following many years of conflict. There are 10 African countries on the index, all near the bottom. South Africa ranks the highest among them at 80. However, Porter says South Africa is doing some positive things.
South Africa has introduced and continues to support and grow a basic universal pension entitlement for all of her older population. And this is terrific. And we've seen some very encouraging public statements from President Zuma and from other senior politicians in South Africa that they recognize the contribution and the importance of supporting their older population. South Africa is actually showing a really good model to the rest of the continent that it is possible to introduce pensions.
South Africa is one of the so-called BRICS nations, countries with strong emerging economies. Other members include Brazil, ranked 58, Russia, ranked 65, India, 69, and China, 48.
A lot of the impetus behind China introducing pension provision for all of her older citizens was to provide an incentive for them to start using their purchasing power earlier in their lives and spending money rather than saving it for a pension.
The African countries of Ghana, Morocco, Nigeria, Rwanda, Zambia, Uganda, Tanzania, Malawi, and Mozambique all rank below South Africa on the Global Age Watch Index. In fact, Mozambique is just above Afghanistan on the list. HelpAge International recommends African nations begin providing pensions when people turn 60. However, if countries are poor, it says they might not be able to institute a pension system to every eligible person at once, or they could require a higher eligibility age for a time. Another factor is Africa's youth population, which is much greater than most parts of the world. Therefore, governments are already hard-pressed to provide education and jobs. Porter says foresight is needed.
Let's not make this a competition between generations. Firstly, in an individual's lifetime, he or she is going to be a youth and an older person. We know many instances whereby older people receiving pensions have allowed children in poor and marginalized households to go to school.
HelpAge says the cost of pensions is much less than often assumed. It cites research in 50 countries that found that the cost of a universal pension for all people over 65 at 20% of average income would range from less than 0.5% of gross domestic product in Burkina Faso to 1.8% in China. Some pensions may not amount to much money, but HelpAge says it can offer some independence and enough to buy essentials like medicine. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Yesterday was the last day of general debate for the 69th session of the UN General Assembly. Eritrean Minister of Foreign Affairs Osman Mohamed Saleh called for reform of the United Nations. He said the body has failed to keep global peace, to enforce justice and equality, advance human rights, or practice non-interference in the affairs of member states.
United Nations reform has formally been on the agenda for close to two decades. No nation has openly disputed the need to restructure the United Nations. Many workable proposals have been presented and thoroughly discussed, and yet we are no nearer to change because of the stubborn and cynical opposition of the dominant powers. Given the determination of these powers to maintain their control of the United Nations and its unrepresentative and undemocratic character, the chances of genuine change in the coming few years are indeed slender.
Saleh said the UN was dominated by a few against the majority. He said the solution is democratization. That includes a restructuring effort that should be led by a common front of nations, including smaller ones that favor equality and chance to have their voices heard. Mr. Saleh said the UN has historically failed to support the will of the Eritrean people. He said for years after World War II, the world body failed to back Eritrea's efforts to separate from Ethiopia, and he said the UN failed to support the Eritrea-Ethiopia Boundary Commission's efforts to end a border war between the two countries. It had awarded the disputed Badema area to Eritrea.
Then, when the Eritrean people embarked on a 30-year armed struggle for national liberation and independence, the superpowers supplied arms and advisors to their client states to crush their rights to self-determination, and the United Nations ignored their plight. And even after achieving independence at a tremendous human and material cost and joining the community of nations, the Eritrean people are still victimized. The United Nations, once again, has failed to uphold an internationally endorsed final and binding arbitration of the border decision. In fact, to add insult to injury, it has imposed unjust sanctions on their country. This travesty of justice has caused harm not only to Eritrea, but to the entire Horn of Africa region.
Many human rights groups, however, agree that Eritreans are being victimized mostly by its own government. President Isaias Afwerki and his party, the People's Front for Democracy and Justice, have held power since independence in 1993. Opposition or alternative parties are not tolerated. Amnesty International says thousands are held in arbitrary and secret detention for questioning government policies. Amnesty says they've never been charged with a crime, tried, or brought before a judge. Also jailed is anyone who follows religions outside the four officially approved by the state. Reporters Without Borders has rated Eritrea as among the most restrictive in the world, even more repressive than North Korea. Human rights groups say over 200,000 refugees have fled the country. Others are internally displaced. The UN supervised the 1991 referendum in which Eritreans voted for independence from Ethiopia. Many UN development agencies work to alleviate poverty and promote development in the country. UN supporters say that after the war between Eritrea and Ethiopia in 2000, peacekeepers were sent to the border area. But Eritrea allegedly restricted vital resources from getting to them, and the UN ended its mission there in 2008. A year later, the Security Council approved an arms embargo on Eritrea amid accusations Eritrea was providing support to radical Islamic group Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The African Union supported the UN's decision. Algerian opposition leaders publicly question whether President Abdelaziz Bouteflika is healthy enough to rule or is even present in the country. He has served as Algeria's president for 15 years. The latest question about the capacity of the 77-year-old president to lead the country came from opposition party leader Soufiane Djilali in a public forum, noting that Mr. Bouteflika did not attend the UN General Assembly in New York City. Other public events in which the president was noticeably absent include government response to last week's Islamist terrorists' beheading of a French hiker, condolences for dozens of French passengers who died in the July crash of an Algerian airline plane, and the deaths of 39 foreign workers at a natural gas plant explosion. Mr. Bouteflika suffered a stroke in 2013 and was last seen publicly more than a month ago. And in news from the U.S., U.S. news outlets have revealed another major security breach involving the agency responsible for protecting President Barack Obama and his family. The reports say an armed guard for a private security firm got on an elevator with Mr. Obama during his visit to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta last month to discuss the Ebola crisis. The guard began taking pictures of Mr. Obama with his cell phone camera, ignoring demands by the Secret Service that he stop. The Secret Service did not know the guard was carrying a gun until he was fired by his supervisor and learned later that he had three prior convictions for assault and battery. The Atlanta incident was revealed hours after Secret Service Chief Julia Pearson testified before a congressional committee about an Army veteran who climbed the White House fence and ran into the building before he was apprehended. That incident occurred September 19th, just 3 days after the Atlanta incident. Secret Service Chief Julia Pearson told the U.S. House Oversight Committee that 42-year-old Omar Gonzalez barreled past one agent and was only caught after running into the ceremonial rooms on the first floor of the White House. The Secret Service at first said Gonzalez was arrested just inside on an unlocked White House door and that he was not armed at the time. The president and his daughters had left the residence shortly before the incident. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiyis Ruhib in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility, compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.